to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Devita Harden, together with my co-host, Susan Franzen. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Devita. And to you, the listener, it's great to have you with us again as a co-host, Devita, helping us to explore an issue that will be of ongoing interest to Ames, affordable housing. This is Fair Housing Month, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. But first, let's greet the day with a quick weather report. Today is partly sunny with a high near 62. Sounds pretty good, but it's awfully windy with a south wind 18 to 23 miles per hour, increasing to 25 to 30 miles per hour. Winds could gust as high as 41 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 31. Breezy with west wind 14 to 18. Gusts as high as 25. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 49. Northwest wind 8 to 13. And Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 31. North-northeast wind 5 to 7 miles per hour. Now for our phenology report.
You say you have a phenology report?
Yes, the signs of the seasons. And today, we have a serious bird watcher, Rachel Simmons, getting us better acquainted with various sparrows who have beautiful songs. And this is something that we can hear right in our own yards and certainly out at Ada Hayden. So let's go for a walk with Rachel.
Hi, my name is Rachel Simmons. I am a senior in animal ecology at Iowa State University, the vice president of the Big Bluestem Audubon Society here in Ames, an avid birder since the tender age of 9. Today, I'm going to be telling you folks about some of Iowa's migrating songbirds. The signs of spring are all around us. Warming temperatures, greening grass, gentle rain showers, the emergence of butterflies and dragonflies, the trills and croaks of frogs, and the jubilant singing of birds. In recent weeks, Central Iowa has experienced an influx of migrating songbirds. Many of the newest arrivals are among the sparrow family. Sparrows may be drab when compared to other songbirds such as warblers, orioles, tanagers, and grosbeaks, but their musical talents do not dull by comparison with other passerines. Take, for example, the white-throated sparrow. This common Iowa migrant is known affectionately as the Whistler of the North. In backyards, parks, and along hedgerows and woodland edges, this bird is easy to see and hear. Its highly distinctive song is often likened to, "Oh, Canada, Canada, Canada," or "Sweet Kimberly, Kimberly, Kimberly." The fox sparrow is a rather rotund and richly plumaged bird who is known to scratch noisily through leaf litter as it forages for tiny insects and other savory morsels of food. With its deep, rust-red wings and tail and the heavy spotting on its breast and sides, the fox sparrow is a handsome fellow. In fact, whenever I see one of these birds, I have the tendency to assume a British accent and say, "Hello, gorgeous." The fox sparrow's song may not be easy to link phonetically with any particular words or phrases, but it is no less pleasing to the ears than that of the white-throated sparrow. The fox sparrow's serenade consists of a series of sweet, slurred whistles that rise and fall in pitch. The Harris's sparrow is another robust sing-songer that travels through Iowa in high numbers during migration. With its black crown, face, and bib, the Harris's is highly distinguishable from other sparrows. Like the preceding species, this bird can be found in open woodlands and brushlands, as well as in backyards and residential areas. The Harris's sparrow's song can be described as mildly somber. It consists of long, clear, quavering whistles. Less common in Iowa than the white-throated, the fox, and the Harris's is the white-crowned sparrow. When singing, this brush-loving migrant utters thin, whistled notes followed by a twittering trill. All four of these species, the white-throated, the fox, the Harris's, and the white-crowned sparrow, will soon be heading for their northerly nesting grounds. Our winter sparrows, the dark-eyed junco, and the American tree sparrow, definitely won't be far behind. Many of Iowa's nesting sparrows have begun to arrive and are taking to song to establish territories. The song sparrow is by far one of Iowa's most common and vocal sparrows. With its familiar, tuneful set of alternating bubbly trills and sugary sweet notes, this bird is ubiquitous along hedgerows, streamside vegetation, and in backyards. Another recent arrival is the chipping sparrow. This diminutive, rufous-capped birdlet is numerous in parks, golf courses, towns, farmlands, and open woods. Its dry, monotonous, chipping trill makes this species easy to locate. As its name suggests, the field sparrow is a resident of open, grassy fields. This baby-faced bird has a highly unique song that is often likened to the bouncing of a ping-pong ball. At first rapid, then a noticeable deceleration toward the end. Anyone wanting to hear the field sparrow need do no more than venture outside of town and to the edge of just about any open field. I promise you it won't be a challenge. Central Iowa's largest and arguably most charismatic member of the sparrow family is the eastern towhee. With its black head, tail, and backside, and the rufous flanks, this long-tailed bird inhabits gardens, fields, and woodland thickets. Much like the fox sparrow, the eastern towhee is known for making quite a bit of noise as it forages through leaf litter. The towhee is handsome indeed, and his song is equally pleasing. When the males sing, it's as though they're saying, "Drink your tea!" Much like the preceding species, the eastern towhee is rather easy to find. Chances are you may even see one in your very own backyard. This is just a tiny sampling of central Iowa's sparrows. There are many more than I have time to talk about here. However, the point is, they are everywhere this time of year. And if you take the time to look and listen, you will not be disappointed. This has been Rachel Simmons, and I thank all of you out there for listening.
And we thank you, Rachel, for taking us on a little walk with the sparrows. We hope to walk with you again someplace. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Davida Harden. At the end of the program, we'll hear a county report from the Talent Factory in Nevada, which will be featuring a live concert on Saturday, April 26th. But now, Davida, would you please introduce your guest?
Yes, I would. Good morning, Vanessa.
Good morning.
We have today with us Vanessa Baker Latimer, Housing Director of the City of Ames for 32 plus years. Vanessa, can you tell us what's going on in the City Fair Housing Division?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for inviting me this morning. It's a brisk but hopeful morning. Is going to warm up. What's going on in the housing division? Well, right now in the federal and city world, April is Fair Housing Month. And we've been doing some activities to honor Fair Housing Month. We partner with the Central Iowa Board of Realtors, the Rental Property Owners, the Ames Human Relations Commission, and a couple of other property owners just to make the public and the community aware of the issues of fair housing, to make sure that we address them in our community. And one thing we did differently this year, where we added to fair housing, is we did a poster art contest where we had 3rd through 8th participate in what fair housing meant to them. And the theme of the contest was, "Welcome to my neighborhood, fair housing is my right." And we had over 40 entries. I was just so overwhelmed and excited about that opportunity that so many kids. We have displayed the posters up at City Hall on the second floor, all of the posters that were submitted. We have a first, second, and third place renters. Their artwork is posted as well. So we invite the public to come up to City Hall on the second floor and take a look at what fair housing looks like through the eyes of students. So that display is up on the wall on the second floor, north end of the building. So that's one of the things we've been doing this month and at the City of Ames. We're also in the process of writing our consolidated plan. Back at the end of March, we did a public forum with the council and the public to talk about our upcoming updating our consolidated plan. As you know, the city became an entitlement community back in 2004, and we receive a federal allocation of community development block grant funds We normally just say CDBG, but you have to say it really fast or you won't get it right. I have to practice that myself.
Thank you. That's a lot going on.
I know.
And maybe by the end of the program, we'll even know what it's about. I think this is the time to bring in our second guest, Diane Burt, who has been studying the CDBG from the community side. Diane, would you please introduce yourself?
Certainly. I'm Diane Burt. I'm with the Amos team that has been looking at housing. Amos, Amid Iowa Organizing Strategy, is a volunteer group that presently is largely folks associated with different congregations in Ames. I'm with United Church of Christ. And the groups have house meetings where we identify issues in the community that citizens might be able to work with the government, officials, and work with the different agencies in town to try to improve our community. And one of the major issues has been housing. As Vanessa is, probably can tell us in much more greater detail, Ames has a very serious problem in housing for low-income folks right now, in large measure because of the growth of Iowa State University. The students, they have maybe more resources to, you think they don't have resources, but they have parents that can help them to get into housing here in Ames. And sometimes parents even come in and buy up low-income housing, rent it out to have their own children there and rent it out to other students. And a lot of our more modest housing for single families has gone to renters. I think most of us in Ames has seen this. So people who of moderate income who want to buy into housing, it's very difficult in Ames. And so that came as a major concern for the community that Amos has addressed. And so I've been working with a team to work with the city. You asked why I know Vanessa. I know Vanessa because we've been at several of her meetings and trying to see how we can help.
Well, I have a question for you, Vanessa. Your department doesn't really deal with the issue of low-income housing for sale. Is that correct? It's rental housing.
No, we do a variety of programs. We do both homeowner and we do renter affordability programs.
I see. What are the homeowner programs?
We have a first-time homebuyer program that we help low-income households and families purchase their first home. It's called a down payment and closing cost assistance program. We grant up to $10,000 for down payment, and we help with closing cost assistance, and it's a 2% interest rate over 12 years, and we're the second mortgagee, and we have a partner lender that's the first mortgagee. And so we just finished taking a group of applicants through our home buyer class. It's a mandatory requirement that you go to a class because we want people to be empowered with knowledge about the affordability, what they can afford if they're ready to buy a home, and what all that responsibility is, because that's a big major purchase. So and now they're out seeing if they qualify for it. And then we also, through one of our programs, have purchased several homes that we also have gotten for sale foreclosures that we rehab and put back on the market to first-time home buyers. We've also done a number of those homes with Habitat for Humanity. So they have taken those homes and made them available to Habitat for Humanity home buyers.
What kind of price range are you talking about?
For Habitat, it's people who qualify under 60%. For our homeowners, HUD allows people to go up to 80% of the Story County median income. And that varies based on the number of people in your family. But most of the people so far, it's about $100,000 or less.
A lot of information. We're discussing the housing crisis here in Ames, but I understand that there is a lack of housing across the spectrum. But most strikingly, there's a lack in the rental housing market. Could you talk about that a little bit, Vanessa, the lack of rental properties?
It's certainly been a challenge. We have abundance of rental housing. It's just the price of price range is not always comparable to people who are at 50% or less of the median income. One of the programs that we administer is a deposit and first month's rent program, and we target families at 50% or the less, where we can help them with deposit assistance and first month's rent, because that's one of the biggest cost factors to get into housing, first of all, is to come up with those requirements. Also, they're finding it hard to find price ranges based on their incomes now. There's a lot of units, but the competition with student housing and more housing being built, that's not necessarily family-oriented. It's more student-oriented. So the choices are kind of shrinking. We do have some Section 8 project-based housing in the community, but it's not enough to kind of cover the growing need in the community for people coming into Ames, wanting to live in Ames. So we're looking at ways that we can try to increase helping them get into the housing that's here.
A couple of years ago, I heard there was a 2-year waiting list for Section 8 housing.
Well, yes. We no longer administer the Section 8 program. It is still available in the community, and I think that's been a misnomer that because the city doesn't administer it, that it's not here. But it's administered by the Central Iowa Regional Housing Authority. And we have, I think last time I checked, over 180-some households that's participating in the program in Ames. So it's still here. You can still get that assistance to live in Ames. It's just that the city doesn't administer it anymore. It was a long waiting list, and lately they've been pulling names off the waiting list for the last 6 months because we give them space in City Hall to conduct their briefings, and a lot of that depends on federal funding, and it just goes up and down. So 1 year you think you have a lot of money, so you start pulling names off the waiting list. If the next year the government adjusts that money, then you have to stop. So it's kind of like this ebb and flow possibility. But for the last couple of months, they've been pulling a lot of names off their waiting list.
Okay, Diane, do you have anything to add to what Vanessa said? Or have a different perspective?
Well, we're very pleased with many of the programs that the city has and those that Vanessa has described. One of the concerns that the Amos Group has is that very little of the funds that come in with the CDBG allotment have been going to those programs. A very significant amount of the money has been going for the infrastructure area, which is essentially curbs and street improvements, and this needs to be, for it to fit for CDBG, it needs to be in areas that, you know, have some low-income housing. But in our mind, these types of funds should come from elsewhere in the city budget, and the CDBG money should really be focused on, you know, the housing issue, not curbs and gutters. So that's one of our issues. We also feel that Vanessa needs more help. We feel that the city is not putting enough into housing. Vanessa's doing a wonderful job, but there's only, she's one person. She doesn't have the staff she needs to really implement the housing needs, to cover the housing needs in Ames. We feel that the CDBG money should be used in partnership with other money. We need to be bringing more money in. And I'm certainly not an expert on this, and I don't think anyone in our Amos team is, but we have heard that we probably could get a housing trust in Ames that would help bring in a lot more money that then could partner with CDBG. This would probably require that we set up a housing task force. Amos feels like maybe it should be a housing transportation task force, because along with housing, we have a lot of transportation issues that hit our low-income residents. Another thing that Amos is pushing for is updating our code. And again, these are all things that are going to, Vanessa is going to need more staff to help do these types of things. Updating codes, there are a number of things, as I understand, in the code that make it difficult for renovating some of the low-income housing we do have and improving that. So those are some main things that I think I could mention at this time.
Okay. And Vanessa, I understand there was a meeting in March to gain the public's input for the 5-year plan for the CDBG funding. There's a lot going on at that meeting. Can you talk about where we are and what's the next step?
It was good participation, and I think one of the things that we need to do more is that there's still lack of education about how the funds being used and how they can be used. From that point, we worked on what our goals would be for the next 5 years. So we're in the process of now putting those goals into the required format for HUD so that we can get that submitted to them. So that's where we are right now. And then once that is done, that will go out for public comment and then hopefully be submitted to HUD within the time frame. And then from there, the next step is that we're going to be working on proposed activities that meet the requirements. Our funding for this coming year, we dropped about $20,000, but that's just how it goes. Some years it's up and some years it's down, so we kind of have to go with that. But I guess one of the things I want to educate the public about is CDBG funds is not available to build affordable housing. It's available for infrastructure. We can use it to put in streets, waters, and sewers, but we can't use it to build housing. It is not for that. That is a program called HOME. We can use a little bit of our money. 15% of the money can be used for public service types of activities. That's where we do our rental assistance type, deposit assistance, transportation assistance programs. And I think that's kind of a still education piece that's not out there as to how the funds can be used. And there certainly is the opportunity to have a lot of the nonprofits and other agencies go after grant funds to help supplement the money that we don't get in CDBG. So I think that needs to be a focus on that as well, because just current year that's coming up, actually homeless money got funded more than CDBG funds. So again, it's an opportunity for our agencies here to also go and help leverage those dollars as well, and that we can bring some of that money to Ames to help address all of our issues.
Well, I have a question about what's infrastructure. I mean, Diane kept talking about curbs. I can't imagine that that's, if this is supposed to deal with housing, that this is what it's about. Is it something else? Is it sewers?
Well, I think what infrastructure means, it doesn't necessarily mean water. It doesn't mean just curbs and gutters. Just like a couple of years ago, we wanted to use the funds to do an affordable housing subdivision up on 24th Street. We wanted to build low-income housing. Well, the only funds we could do, CDBG could only put in the water, streets, and sewer to buy down the cost. It couldn't actually build the housing, because it's kind of like for that type of infrastructure. Just like infrastructure, HUD calls infrastructure housing rehab program. That's another program that we're working on implementing, is getting people money to help maintain their properties with roof repair, furnaces to maintain their property. Where in HUD's mind, that's an infrastructure type thing, because you're doing something to a current property that's existing, that they consider that infrastructure. So a lot of times people get that confused, that it's just curbs and gutters, but without it, you can't get the housing built, because you got to have streets, you have to have water, you have to have sewer to get to the houses. So it's that type of base program, and then you build from that.
Well, I'm confused about the roof. This happens to be a personal issue for me, because I have some rental housing that you once inspected, so you're familiar with what I'm talking about. And this year we needed a roof.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, that's the landlord's responsibility. Who gets help with their roofs?
Oh, we were working on a program to help single-family homeowners with their property, to maintain their properties. Because when you're low income and you have bills and you have jobs and you have medical costs, you can't always repair your property. And then we have a lot of our aging households that need handicap accessibility, and they need ramps and so forth. So we're working on bringing that grant program to help people maintain their properties as well, because that needs to be balanced. We have to look at the homeowner side and we have to look at the rental side, and we have to balance helping both low and moderate income households on both ends of the spectrum.
How do people find out about these programs?
Well, a lot of our programs, we advertise on that webpage, and we also advertise in the local paper so that people are aware. We try to do it in the Sun, so that's more distributed than trying to buy a subscription through the Tribune, but we also run articles in there too. But we normally advertise through that medium.
Well, I have another question about Diane saying she thought you needed more staff, and it's interesting because when you came in, you were talking about the hours you worked. So do you agree with her that it would be helpful to have more staff, or is it not?
Well, it's always good to have more staff. And I did have a huge staff prior to us transferring the administration of the Section 8 program. So I did lose several staff members. And CDBG, as far as administrative-wise, isn't bringing that much money in to have a full staff again. I do have some part-time people that come in and help administer programs, and we're trying to build that back up. But, you know, it's a transition to go from administering five programs down to one and just trying to build that back up. So, yeah, I can always use professional staff that know how to maneuver through all the federal guidelines. It's always helpful.
Yes, it is. Go ahead, Diane.
I think it would be wonderful if the city had some staff to help the nonprofits, you know, such as Amos, help give us guidance on what needs to be done to develop a housing trust and be able to get the home funds into Ames. Because it sounds like we could qualify if we had the right things set up.
Well, it certainly is a process because we had that developed here before they actually came up with the concept of housing trust funds. We had the Ames Story County Board, where the city of Ames and eight other communities in Story County put together the Ames Story County Housing Program. And we got a state grant and did housing in Ames and eight other communities in Story County. That was the basis of how the state got to having a housing trust fund. It's something that we started back in 1993. It takes a lot of effort to administer a program that on that scale, but not to say that we can't go back and start looking at it again. Mm-hmm. I think, again, people have to be educated on how you administer programs. They come with a lot of requirements and stipulations, and you have to really be experienced about making sure that you meet the needs of what the requirements of the program are.
Hearing the word requirements, opportunities, help, assistance, so that's a good sign in our housing conversation, and that's hope for the future as we go forward. I think so. Don't you, Susan?
Oh, I think, yes. I think there's a lot more possibility here than I imagined. Mm-hmm. So I hope we'll be having some more programs on what is available in our community and where we can go from here.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today, Davita Hardin and Susan Franson, have been speaking with Vanessa Baker-Latimer, Housing Coordinator for the Planning and Housing Department of Ames, and Diane Vert, community member active in studying the issues of low-income housing and transportation in Ames. After the break, we'll be talking a little more with them to wrap up, and for the balance of the program, we'll be speaking with Larry Sloan, who, with his wife Cindy, has been restoring the old Camelot Movie Theater in Nevada as a music and entertainment venue. listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1. Your hosts for today, Davita Hardin and Susan Franson, have been speaking with Vanessa Baker-Latimer, Housing Coordinator for the Planning and Housing Department of Ames, and Diane Vert, community member active in studying the issues of low-income housing. Are there any things that we haven't touched on yet that you would like to make sure that people know about?
I think another issue on housing is the homeless situation and caring particularly for homeless families. You know, we have a wonderful facility for homeless individuals, you know, down, I think, South 5th Street. But we don't have resources for homeless family. And so I think we need, as a community, to figure out a way to get more shelter for homeless families. Hopefully, eventually, we can help move more of the homeless families into housing. That's the other thing we've been talking about. But, you know, we do have a homeless problem in Ames.
Now, are you suggesting a homeless shelter for a family shelter?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a need in Ames, and I don't know the specifics of how this is funded. I don't know if CDBG can be involved at all in that, and maybe Vanessa can tell us if there's any possibility.
I think we have to, Diane, agree. Mm-hmm. I think we have to look at all of where our needs are falling through, whether it's homeless, whether it's transitional housing, whether it's permanent housing. I think through the process that we're going to be doing our CDBG funds, where we can do it with CDBG, it certainly can be a opportunity to help finance it. But I think we also have to look at, like Dan mentioned earlier, and we've been talking about bringing a lot more financial resources to make a bigger impact. And it's going to take time. We're not going to be able to do it overnight. And I think that's where the patience comes in. And we have to be very strategic about it, because sometimes once you get the funding and it's done, there's no future funding for administration and keeping it going. So when we look at pulling all these resources together, we have to also make sure that there's going to be funding in place to keep it going. So we kind of have to look at it and try to prioritize all of those needs and work together as a community to address the needs based on what the programs require, and then focus on that. And you know, everybody's very passionate about it in the community. That's what I love, that we do have a passion to address it. It's just going about how we can make it successful, and that people really needing it are the ones that are going to benefit from it. And I think we have a good start with the communications that were happening with all the groups here.
I have a question about the developer-driven low-income housing. I'm familiar with this in another community. I know that there are significant grants that a developer gets to develop low-income housing, and I know the history of some in Ames. I think that it has to remain low-income for 20 years, and then and that's what's happened to some of our low-income housing. I believe the housing that's near the campus over on Sheldon?
Arbor Hills.
Yes, mm-hmm. That used to be back when, I have to say this, about how our assistance to low-income single parents has changed. There was a time when ADC, the Aid to Dependent Children, I guess, that would fund a full assistance for a full 4 years for a woman with children. And those properties were perfect for that. Women and their children could live there. They could go to Iowa State. There was even a daycare on site. And now it's for students who are not families, not parents, and not low income. And it was a tremendous loss. Now, do you have any comments? Are there any new programs like this coming on that you know of?
Well, back then, those were directly funded by HUD, and a lot of those projects are not being funded directly by HUD anymore. They're now being funded more through the state, through the tax credit programs. And we have had self-developers participate in the tax credit program, but that's kind of replaced a lot of the OHUD funding that used to fund those directly. And they did have 25-year contracts, and then at the end of that year, the developer property owner could renew or they could make it market rate housing, and that's what has happened in that particular situation. We still have a few here that are directly funded by HUD, and they have to kind of stay that way as part of their contract. But the new method of financing has been lately through the Iowa Finance Authority Tax Credit Program. And I'm not versed enough to tell you all the ins and outs of it, but it's certainly something that developers can look at as a means of financing affordable housing.
Well, thank you. And I think thanks for both of you coming in. I know I've certainly learned a lot today. And
so did I. I thank you, Diane. Thank you, Vanessa, for giving up your precious time to be with us this morning.
And thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Yeah.
For the last part of our program, we're going to go out in the county. But goodbye, Vanessa. Goodbye, Diane. DeVita, do you have something right now?
No, I don't. It's just that I love learning. I love providing information to our listening audience.
You're listening to Local Talk Community Radio 89.1, where we examine the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today are DeVita Hardin and Susan Franzen. Have been speaking with Vanessa Baker-Latimer, Housing Coordinator for the Planning and Housing Department of Ames, and Diane Burt, community member active in Amos, studying the issues of low-income housing and transportation in Ames. This has been for Fair Housing Month. For the balance of our program, we'll be speaking with Larry Sloan, who, with his wife Cindy, is restoring the old Camelot Movie Theater in Nevada as a live music entertainment venue. He'll be telling us about the upcoming show on Saturday, April 26th, Oldies But Goodies, which will feature a lot of local performers from our area.
Coming down the railroad line, how much farther back did she get on? Old brown suitcase that she carried, I look for it everywhere. It just ain't here among the rest. And I'm a little upset to tell you, engine, engine number 9. Coming down the railroad line, I know she got on in Baltimore. 110 miles ain't much distance, but it sure do make a difference. I don't think she loves me anymore. I warned her of all the dangers. Don't speak to strangers, and chance that she find new romance. Warm her lips to kiss her, arms to hold her tighter, stirring new fires inside her. How I wish that it was me instead of he that stands beside her. Engine, engine number 9. Coming down the railroad line, I know she got on in Baltimore. 110 miles ain't much distance, but it's sure to make a difference. I don't think she loves me anymore. No, I don't think she loves me anymore. Don't think she loves me anymore. Roger Miller, 1964. All right, here.
Hello, Larry. We're talking with Larry Sloan over in Nevada, manager of an owner with his wife Cindy of the Talent Factory. This is KHOI Community Radio. And Larry, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, good to be talking with you this morning. So first, let's just start with the theater. How did you happen to get this historic theater, and do you know anything about its history?
Well, actually, we know quite a bit about the history. It was built in 1928. It was a wonderful theater back then. It was the showcase of the area, and it started off doing vaudeville and picture shows, and then in the 1970s was bought by Freely Theaters, and then kind of retired from the Freely Group in the early 2000s. They had tried doing movies and such in there, and when we found it, it was in pretty bad disrepair, and we thought this would make a great live venue to bring live entertainment in. And so Cindy and I decided that we were going to try to bring it back into the community and bring it up to par again.
Well, and how long has this been that you've owned it and been working on it?
We took possession of the theater in November of 2012. And we've been running shows in there for the last year, local shows and bands and comedians, that type of thing. And we've had just a great time doing it.
Well, I noticed from the YouTube videos that you sent me that you yourself are a performer, right?
Well, I like to think so. I get my 15 minutes of fame every week that way.
Well, I would recommend seeing some of your YouTubes. I really enjoyed you and the other sampling of performers, the one of which we just heard. Now, who was that?
That was Jesse Lopez. I met Jesse doing karaoke probably 4 years ago. And as with a lot of our performers, I was just blown away by the talent that they had, and decided that, you know, this would be a great place to find talent and to be able to showcase it on a stage rather than just in the karaoke environment.
So then, are most of the people really local, like from the Nevada area, or do you get some people from Ames or from Boone or elsewhere?
Well, we get actually people from all over. We do, of course, have our locals there. Tom Richards is one of my favorites in there. Tom's been with us almost since day one, and he's a wonderful folk singer and a musical storyteller. I just absolutely love his style and his voice, the quality of it.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that. You probably know that, because I think I told you that Tom Richards has been with KHOI from the very first, because he and Al Harris wrote Backtrackin', our theme music that takes the program in and out every time. And so I'm really always interested to hear what he's doing. And I'm pleased to know that he's over in the Talent Factory. Maybe we can hear more of him sometime. Could you tell us a little more about what's coming up? There's this program in, what are the dates and times?
Well, we've got the next show coming up is the 26th, and that is the Talent Factory Regulars. Those are our regular cast members, including Tom, Deb Malmstrom from Nevada there, Laura Dolly from Colo, Carl Winterhalter from Elkhart, and then, of course, Jesse from Des Moines. And, I mean, we've just got wonderful players in that. That's an oldies but goodies show. And then following that, we've got Big Joe Kinzer Band, and they do a lot of ballads and country alternative. Wonderful band. Love them to death. After that, we've got the Marshall County Hangman with David Gray. David's one of our regulars and performs in our show solo, and then brings his band in every few months. So they're coming in, and they write a lot of their own material. It's a great band. And then at the end of the month, we've got the Midwest Rock and Soul Review with Eddie Simpson. And Eddie's an Elvis impersonator and does a great job. And Maurice Jules, who is an old Motown doo-wop specialist, who has opened for about every major Motown group in the world back in the 50s and 60s and had some hits of his own. So they're a great band, and we're looking forward to having them back as well.
Well, this is an amazing schedule for Nevada, Iowa. I think you obviously need to have more publicity. It's also exciting to me because it's truly Central Iowa.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, and that was one of the things that, that we really wanted to keep the community involved in our acts and in the entertainers. We do have some exciting things coming up. We've been picked up by Entertainment Group, and which is a national booking agency, and we'll be getting nationally touring comedians in, magicians from Las Vegas, ventriloquists, and hypnotists. And we'll be getting basically a lot of the same acts that you'd see at Funny Bones and a lot of the large comedy clubs and clubs around the Midwest.
Well, now the next question is, what about your audience? What kind of audiences have you been getting, and what do you foresee?
Well, we've got a great core of audience, generally, I think, probably from 40 to 60. But with bringing in some of these national touring acts, we expect to get probably a lot of younger people in, a lot of college students, we hope, from the area that love magicians and hypnotists and ventriloquists and such. Those seem to draw a little younger crowd from the 20s and up a little bit more. The thing that we've really wanted to do, and we promised when we opened, is we will always make our reservations open to the community at least a week before anybody else can get those reservations and those tickets, so that the community has first shot at the best seats and the best shows.
Now, what is the capacity of the Camelot? I mean, the Talent Factory.
It's okay. It's kind of the Talent Factory located in the Camelot. It's an old icon that we don't really want to lose. But we can seat up to 450 people when we've got all the seating in. We're closer to probably 420 to leave Smary open for engineering and dancing.
Dancing? Now, where's the dancing?
Well, we've got an area down in front of the stage that we've taken a row or two out, and it's we're going to bring it up a little more flat into a dance floor. But right now it's open and wide enough that people can dance. A lot of people do end up dancing to Big Joe Kinzer Band. It's a very danceable band.
With the national bookings, of course, you're still going to maintain the core local performers throughout your season?
Absolutely. What we are for the national booking agency, we're what's known as a one-off, where if that agency has somebody appearing, for example, at a large club in Des Moines on Saturday, we may get them on Friday or on a Sunday. And, that's their way of, A, staying on stage, and B, making a little extra money. And then we have just our regular shows around that. And hopefully some of our people will be able to open for those national touring acts.
So there's a lot of synchronicity there, a lot of overlap. Well, this has been very interesting. And can you tell me a little more about yourself, you and Cindy? Did you grow up in Nevada?
No, I grew up actually in Ankeny, what used to be a very small town, obviously. And 20 years ago, we moved up to Nevada just to kind of get away from the urban area. And I love small towns and small communities. I love the relationships that we find in them and generally the people. We just decided that we'd rather be in a smaller town and one that we're more comfortable in than a large urban area.
What's your day job? I can't imagine that you can support yourself on the Talent Factory yet.
Well, we haven't. My wife has Cindy's Daycare, which is a very successful daycare, and she's been so successful at that for so long. She's got her degree in early childhood development, and I am a plant engineer for a company called Pure Foods in the mornings, and then I go up to the theater then in the afternoons and try to get work done there.
What's a plant engineer?
Well, basically, I take care of the equipment and make sure that the automation and the electronic and the mechanical engineering are maintained well and operating in peak efficiency.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. You know, I'm so oriented to agriculture now. I immediately thought about genetic engineering. That you could plant the old-fashioned way.
Just real good food. That's all we do.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And we'll look forward to hearing more about the Talent Factory in the future.
We look forward to seeing more of our friends in there. And thank you for the opportunity to get our word out a little bit.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
You have been listening to KHOI Community Radio. Today, Davida Harden has been my co-host, and we've heard from Vanessa Baker-Latimer from the Planning and Housing Department of Ames. She's the housing coordinator there. And Diane Bird, a community member and activist in Amos, studying issues of low-income housing and moderate-income housing and transportation in Ames. And we have been speaking with Larry Sloan of the Talent Factory in Nevada. We did have a very special phonology this morning introducing Rachel Simmons with the Sparrows, and we hope you were tuning in early enough to hear her. Our guests have all together been Rachel Simmons, Vanessa Baker-Latimer, Diane Bird, and Larry Sloan. Your hosts today have been
Davida Harden
and Susan Franzen. And thanks you very much for production assistance from Greta Anderson and James Winters. Local Talk is engineered by Rebecca Brown. Music you heard today was Engine Number 9, written by Roger Miller from his CD, Roger Miller the Third Time Around, and performed by Jesse Lopez live at the Talent Factory in Nevada. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and the Tom Richards that you heard about from Nevada, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on the air in 2012 on our website. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There you find lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families, donating $20 a month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses, though we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback, either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
I'll get it.